Hey there, party people. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 72. This episode is brought to you by Horror in Clay. Collectors of horror-themed art with a tropical twist will already be familiar with the artistic work and madcap visions of Jonathan M. Chaffin of Horror in Clay, maker of fine horror-themed tiki mugs, art, and ephemera. You may already know his Cthulhu mug, Cask of Amontillado, or Dreadful Ape mug. But now, somewhere in the infinite multiverse or just on the other side of this shadow, the King in Yellow awaits. The Pallid Mask, an 8-inch tiki mug inspired by the linked short stories of Robert Chambers and H.P. Lovecraft. Now available on Kickstarter and shipping in August. Search for Pallid Mask on Kickstarter.com or stop by horrorinclay.com. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum. Since 1854, Tandawai Distillers has been producing quality rum from the Philippines. The indisputable history of their Philippine rum is the foundation of which the Tandawai legacy continues today. Tandawai Asian Rum is made with premium varieties of heirloom sugarcane grown in the Visayas region of the tropical island of the Philippines. It is the same Southeast Asian vintage canes that has been cultivated for centuries in the tropical maritime climate and rich Philippine soil, which makes Tandawai Asian Rum distinctly Filipino. Tandawai Rum also has lots of history in the tropical exotic cocktail era when it first began with Don the Beachcomber and his Filipino barmen in the 1930s. There's evidence that these legendary bartenders created some of the first tropical cocktail recipes using Tandawai Rum. For more information, go to TandawaiUSA.com or stop by Tandawai USA's Facebook page. This podcast is also sponsored by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits. Or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crested mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit RoyalHawaiianLB.com. On this episode, we chat with Dog Davis. Dog Davis is one of my buddies in the tiki and cocktail community who I largely consider an expert and purveyor of these cultures. He's a really fascinating guy, having done some really interesting things in his life. For example, he once wrote a food column for the LA Times, was once self-employed as a professional gambler, and today he works in the entertainment industry right here in Hollywood, California. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. If you enjoyed this episode, hit the subscribe button. The podcast is free, and it will make it easier for you to enjoy future episodes as they are delivered to you automatically. Shares on your social media pages are always appreciated, and if you'd like to support the show, please stop by DesertOasisRoom.com and click on the donate button. Every donation, no matter the size, helps keep this podcast coming to you every week. Okay, without further ado, here's my conversation with Dog Davis. I hope you enjoy it. Alrighty, let me put my glasses on so I can see. I can read what we're.
Okay, so which kitty is this one?
So this one is Lily. Where
Lily.
Is she?
Is she over, right over there?
Yeah. So she was. I think she was born to a stray.
Okay.
So we got her at the shelter, and when we got her, we had to sign one of these. I don't know if you call it a disclosure or something that basically acknowledged that we know that she was, you know, that she was labeled a feral cat. Mm-hmm. She was very skittish around people, mm-hmm. and she's getting better every day. So it's like she's not really scared right now. She's probably more curious about who you are. But she was. At one point, she was, you know, any little noise, she would run and hide, you know. So she's hiding right now, mm-hmm. because she doesn't know you. But see, she's more being more curious than being scared. So
my friend Richard, he has a pit bull that was part of the Michael Vick thing.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Missing teeth and claws and things like that. But you talk about like skin. They have to go through a ton of paperwork in order to adopt one of those.
Wow, that's heartbreaking to hear about those dogs.
But Mel has lived a decent life the last, you know, 8 or 9 years there. You know, but yeah, it took a long time to get adjusted to right. human life.
Right, you know? Right, right. So, she was only... Well, they said she was 3 months old. I don't think she was 3 months old because she was really tiny. Mm. She was probably only 2 months old. But, you know, if you look at her now, I mean, you know, she's actually done really well over the past couple of months just being here. You know, she's getting into trouble, you know, like all cats do.
Right.
Aww. So, see, she's just curious who you are. But,
hi, Lily.
Yeah. Aww, so... Thanks for asking.
Yeah. I see you got the Ron Jeremy rum.
It's actually pretty good. Do you want to try some?
I would.
Just grab it off the wall there.
Sure.
So there's, we have little glasses right under here.
Okay.
Right, where your elbow is.
Oh. Yeah,
there. You can use those or down below.
I see like a little smaller. Yes. Yeah. There, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Would you like one?
I would.
Oh. All right.
Well, you know, Ron Jeremy and I have the same doctor, so I feel that my doctor can cure anything if needed.
Now, I bought that because it was a signed bottle, right?
Oh, okay.
And
oh,
there it's got is. His autograph on there, okay. And he did a signing session at High Times. And then when I sampled it, I thought, hey, this isn't bad, and I went online to check out reviews to see if it was just me because I didn't know if it was, you know, I thought, hey, this is not bad. Is it just me? And actually, it had some pretty good reviews. So,
cool, Will.
But he's got more than one expression, too. So, cheers.
Cheers. Spiced rum, let's
see. Yeah, this is the spiced.
Oh, that is good. That's the aftertaste
right?
is really, it's very, very molasses-y.
Right, I was going to say, yeah.
That's a nice tasting rum. Huh.
Especially for a spiced rum.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
When you consider that, you know, spiced rum is, like for me, the spiced rum is not exactly.
It's spiced because it covers up some other
I suppose
problems.
You could say that, but you know, they're not sippers. So.
Premium Panamanian rum with spice and other natural flavors. 94 proof.
Oh, I didn't know it was 94. I thought it was an 80.
There you go. Well, yeah. That's nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just shove it back there. I think there.
Right.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, thanks for driving out.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm sorry that I live so far away. I call it the desert oasis room for a reason.
No,
you're halfway to Palm Springs right now.
You
so
know, I've had the t-shirt for a while, so I felt I needed to...
So I appreciate your support on that. This right here, this shirt is the Proto, and it's the same as yours. Actually, I have it folded up where there's actually a... And I'll show it to you after I unfold it. I don't want to take my mic off and right now, but there's a part where they missed some of the ink.
Oh.
And where it's supposed to be yellow, it's actually white, so...
But now your newer shirts all have the rum sponsorship on it, right? The Tandoi.
I only have two that have the Tandoi logo on there. But I've been working with a few designers for some other shirts. It's been kind of a pain because... So I'm trying to do something a little bit different than having people see like the same kind of art over and over and over again. Not that there aren't talented people in the tiki...
Sure.
Genre, right?
Sure.
They're all talented. I just wanted to be a little bit different with the styles that mm-hmm. that I'm going to be putting up on my Amazon page. And so I've been going online for graphic designers outside of the tiki genre.
Okay.
And it's been kind of a pain because they don't understand the tiki
right.
genre. You know, they just don't, they miss the mark, you know. But I've been working with a couple of them and we're getting there, so... we'll see what happens.
Okay.
So, I know that we talked about doing some of these cocktails that have chartreuse.
Green chartreuse, because you talk a lot about the green lizard that you don't like, and I understand why you wouldn't.
Well, you know, the thing is, I associate the taste of green chartreuse as unenjoyable because of the green lizard. But I have had cocktails with it before. Mm-hmm. I think I've only had one with it before. And I actually enjoyed the cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps it's that the green lizard is mostly a shot of 151.
Right. And, I mean, to me, it's like if do you like sriracha sauce?
I do.
But if your first experience with sriracha sauce would be if I took the bottle and just squeezed it in your mouth as hard as you could.
Right. See,
that's what I think the shot does. I think the shot's probably not your friend because it's not diluted with anything. It's 110 proof.
Right.
And then you're putting it with 151 proof rum.
151 proof. And what's interesting about the green chartreuse is it's made by French monks or something like that, right? And they've been doing it for what, 200 years or something?
400 years. 1605.
So twice as 1605.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so it's supposed to be 130 herbs that at any given time only three monks know the recipe.
Oh, really?
So when one dies and someone else, I guess they make so many bottles a year, there's got to be more people who know what it's made out. But that's the story they give you. Is that it's,
what do you think about Coca-Cola?
Exactly. Right? It's the exact same
thing. So supposedly there's only two people that know the recipe.
Right.
One guy knows one half, the other guy knows the other half. And they're probably the largest producing beverage company in the world.
But I don't think so. I don't think so. But, you know, who knows? Maybe that is. But what I like is that I like the fact that monks get me drunk.
That's right.
So between this and like the Chimay Ale, which is Trappist monks from Belgium.
See, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Trappist monks from Belgium. And they put a little bit of yeast at the bottom of the bottle so it continues to ferment until you open it.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. That's the thing with Chimay. It's a really...
So what's the thing about monks making this kind of stuff? Because those aren't the only two that monks are making.
Yeah.
Because monks are making wine and other things too.
Sure. To me, that just seems like it's a good source of income, especially if you're out in Europe.
Oh, okay, okay.
Like, you know, where are they going to make bread or have a cook?
Well, it just seems to me that, and maybe I'm confusing this for more of a Christian-based lifestyle, right? Where you're supposed to be living a life of modesty and a life of, I don't want to say abstinence, but, you know, it's not certainly a life where they're encouraged to imbibe.
Right. I mean, I grew up as a Methodist, and it was all about moderation, you know.
Right. So the fact that they're making this stuff for, you know, birthday shots at the TPT. Right.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, there you go. So, what are you going to make?
I'm going to make a drink that I first had at the Shameful Tiki Room a couple of years ago. It was on their first menu. It's called the Velocet. Velocet was a British motorcycle from the 20th century. And if you ever see the movie Clockwork Orange, the Droogies are drinking milk Velocet in the milk bar. That's the name of the thing. But it was on the menu at the Shameful Tiki Room. I had it, and I went to the Shameful Tiki Room like a couple of years ago, had it, enjoyed it so much, I went back the next day just to have it again.
I didn't have it at the Shameful Tiki Room, so this is going to be the first time I'm having it. And, you know, while you're mentioning Shameful Tiki Room, I want to give them a shout out because the guys at the Shameful Tiki Room are really great guys.
Yeah,
you know,
Rod,
I think a lot of the people here in Southern California know them already. Rod Moore and Brian Birch hangs out there. And then, you know, there's a few other people that we know, like Kyle Lords and Chad Rivard used to work there.
Yeah. I got this bottle from my friend Bill, who quit his high-paying job at Samsung to join the Peace Corps.
Oh, really?
A few months ago. And so he gave me this half-open, you know, bottle of a green chartreuse. This is like a $60 bottle of liquor. So once I received the bottle, I texted both Rod Moore and Chad to get their recipe for the Velocet.
Yeah.
They both came through. Chad's had one extra ingredient, which I will put that one in as well.
Okay.
But
and he quit his high-paying job to join the Peace Corps.
Yes, and within a month of going to Burkina Faso, the sixth poorest country in the world, someone...
I had never even heard of that
country. It's in Africa, and someone on a dirt road on a motorcycle ran into my friend and shattered his leg.
Wow.
And so he's now back in the States going through a bunch of different surgeries.
Okay.
I thought, you know, I probably should give him the chartreuse back, but there's only a few little bit left.
There's
so
not
I think
a lot there.
I think we need to drink it for him.
Now, I actually have a little bit of chartreuse here because of the Green Lizard shot.
Okay.
And, you know, if I wanted to make them here. And I actually do, believe it or not, every once in a while. But it's for new people that come here that haven't been here before. Mm-hmm. So
I would imagine green chartreuse is not in a lot of home bars.
Yeah, you know, but it, from what I understand, it is kind of a popular ingredient. There's a yellow chartreuse, too.
Yes, which is a lower alcohol content.
Oh, it is?
It's only 80 proof.
Okay, okay.
And the color chartreuse...
Yeah.
Is named after the liquor, not the other way around.
Okay.
They've only been using the term chartreuse to refer to that shade of green for about 150 years.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that the one difference between Chad's recipe and Rod's recipe is falernum, just a quarter ounce. And I don't know if you need it because I'm sure there's a there's cloves in the green chartreuse,
right,
which is like the main flavor. But I put it in, and I also, because, I mean, everyone's got, like, the John D. Taylor, the Velvet
right.
Falernum, but since there's no rum in this, I didn't want to use that Falernum, so I'm using Beach Bum Berry's Latitude 29
cool.
Falernum.
Okay.
He has gotten some Brooklyn Syrup Company to make his stuff. He makes you can buy Falernum and Orgeat
okay.
for like $15 a pint.
Okay.
I don't work for the company, but yes.
But we're going to shout out Jeff.
Sure,
stuff.
Sure,
you know, yeah,
absolutely.
Jeff Berry,
it's
of course.
But yeah, this is a non-alcoholic Falernum.
Oh, it is.
So
okay,
that's why I figured it probably works better with something where there's no other rum in it. So.
Okay. So it's really more of a sweetener then.
Yeah, it is. You can tell there's lime in it. You can tell there's a lot of cloves in it. And you can tell there's sugar in it. That's about just no rum. Let's see. And then making two of them. So I've got to remember to double everything in the recipe.
Yeah, double all of your...
double all the ingredients, yeah. Squeeze these limes just before driving out here, so that should be good. And then, so it's you got the Falernum, you got lime, you got pineapple, you got some bitters, and then the green chartreuse.
Peychaud.
Yeah, you got the Peychaud bitters plus the Angostura.
Okay.
And you shake it, and then you also put some the green chartreuse in these little coupe glasses, and you set it aflame.
Oh!
Then you use this, you use the shaken cold material to douse the flame. So
okay.
So
be careful about the flame because you've got some dry grass.
I see. I see that, and usually it just makes a little like a blue orb,
okay.
So it doesn't go too far out. I need a little ice from your
scoopers right
here. The scoopers right there. Okay.
I'm sorry about my ghetto chunky ice.
Oh no, that's. Well, I mean, we're just using this to shake.
Just to shake. Okay.
Just to shake. So. Scoop here. I love that ice.
Yeah, it's the nautical diving bell.
Mm-hmm. Shaking in my Dodgers shaker that I got at Dodger Stadium once.
So wait, you have a blue Dodgers shaker that says Big Blue Margarita
yes.
on it, and we're shaking a drink that has green chartreuse
yeah,
in
so
it.
Yeah, so the colors are interesting. But yes, we will.
Interesting to say the least. Okay.
There's one.
Oh, that's
isn't that beautiful?
Beautiful. That's
look
beautiful.
Look at that.
Yeah.
And now, you want it to caramelize the sugar a little bit, but mostly it brings out the aroma, the flavor. And then you need to douse it. With the liquid, cold
okay.
liquid, we'll douse it. Yeah, some nice presentation.
Very nice.
And now, sir?
Oh, you don't have to give me the big one. You can have the big one.
I think you'll enjoy this.
Cheers.
Cheers.
What's the name of this drink?
It's called the Velocet.
Velocet. Okay. Yeah. See, I can taste the chartreuse.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is... When I taste that chartreuse, it's normally followed with a kick to my throat because of the the shot, right? It's right, 151. Right. This is actually very pleasant.
Sure, yeah. I mean, with the lime juice and the pineapple and the flarinum, it checks a lot of boxes that you would get at a tropical bar.
And it brings the chartreuse right to the front. Mm-hmm. It's like it complements the taste of the chartreuse.
Yeah, it does.
It tastes very much like green chartreuse. And, mm-hmm. and the rest of it is kind of like the players mm-hmm. in the rest of the game, right?
I agree. It does highlight this one particular liqueur, and it tastes good.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for making this. So I'm so happy to have you on the podcast because, you know, over the years that I've known you, mm-hmm. we've talked a lot about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some interesting stuff in your background. I consider you a very fascinating person.
Thank you.
And very cultured also. Oh, so whenever you post about some kind of bar or eatery or anything like that on social media, it immediately piques my interest because if you post about it, it's something that in my mind has to be seen and has to be experienced.
Thank you very much.
Now, part of that comes from knowing that you were a food critic at one time for the LA Times.
Right. The LA Times had a column called Drive-By Dining. It was about fast food, and there was about a three-year period where I wrote all but one of those columns. I wrote like 60 of them, I think. But it was usually for when a mainstream fast food joint was having a special offer. You know, it was like a limited time for a couple of months only. You know, they'll Crunchwrap Supreme with bacon or whatever. You know, so okay. I would try that
so
out.
So would it be like the McRib?
Yeah, that sort of thing. You
kind
know,
of like that, right?
Yeah, I never did McRib.
The Shamrock Shake or something.
Right, well, right. But it was always, you know, something different and limited time. I got to expand it a little bit. I got to write about, you know, what were the best kids' meals, what right. were the best value meals, but mostly it was that. But the very last one I wrote was actually probably the worst thing that I had was the Domino's Oreo cookie pizza.
Oh my God, that sounds horrendous.
Yeah. And the thing is, they since then, they've done commercials where they've made fun of the fact that they made an Oreo cookie pizza. And you can actually get it at the Shakey's Buffet. Shakey's Buffet will actually serve.
They make that?
They make the Domino's. Well, they make the Oreo cookie pizza, yeah.
So, you know, Domino's is a big company. Mm-hmm. And my first thought is if they're going to come up with something like that, that it goes through a series of focus groups,
yes,
I suppose,
you would,
right?
Would think,
first,
yeah.
You have the guy who pitches the idea.
Right.
And then you have a team who makes it, mm-hmm. and then they test that, not just to a specific group of maybe internal people, but they'll test that with the public, right?
Yeah, sure. They got to go through some sort of focus group.
They've got
group.
To before yeah, it sure. goes out there. Right. And so, like, the fact that it made it through all those steps and sounds horrendous
right.
is it's
yeah,
kind
just
of
my
weird.
Name, Domino Oreo Cookie Pizza, sounds horrible.
Because, you know, there was a time when I used to go to Taco Bell,
mm-hmm.
and not the restaurant, to their lab. Their lab was a couple of miles from where I used to work.
I
got on their list, and whenever they would have new menu items that they wanted to test out, they would send out an email to all of these people,
uh-huh.
and then you'd make an appointment, and you'd go down.
Oh, cool.
And you'd
be the test subject.
You'd be the test subject. So, and it was crazy because, like, so I'd go to the corporate office,
mm-hmm.
and I'd check in with the receptionist, and then they'd bring you off to this side door, and you walked into this area that it was a room that just had booths. They looked like voting booths.
Okay.
And you'd go in and you'd sit down at the booth, and there would be a roll-up window in front of you and a computer screen, a computer screen that was kind of like a touch screen.
So did just the window lower and raise?
Well, the window was lowered when I would sit down, and then you would sign in on the screen,
uh-huh.
and then it would tell you what you were going to be tasting today.
Okay.
So then the window would open when you would press, you know, that you're ready to start. Mm-hmm. This window would open, and there would be a whole Taco Bell kitchen inside behind the window with servers in lab coats. They're wearing lab coats, believe
yeah,
it or not.
Yeah.
They would put the food in front of you, whether it was a burrito or a taco or nachos, whatever it was. And they would put it in front of you, and then they'd close the window, right? So the window would shut down.
It's kind of like the strip joints where the girl dances. And then
right. I think they call that a peep show.
Oh, peep show thing, go on.
Yeah, peep show kind of thing. So once you got the food, you'd start eating it, and then you would answer these questions on the screen. Like, for example, one time it would ask me about the taco shell. Mm-hmm. So it would say, what do you think about the thickness of the shell? What do you think? And then you'd answer the questions, mm-hmm. right? And then you'd go to the next one. What do you think about the color of the shell? And then I'd answer the questions. Go to the next one. What do you think about the texture? Like, is it too rough? Is it too smooth? All this, like, total case study stuff, right? Is it too... another thing is, like, does it look too machine-made? Is it too round? Is it too perfect of a half circle? Right.
Interesting.
Right. Because sometimes people look at that and they say, oh, there's no street cred here.
Right.
You know, this is not like a street taco. Like, this is a manufactured blah, blah, blah. And so you'd go through that. And then after you finished all those questions, you'd hit send. Then the window would open up. They'd take your plate and then they'd put another thing in front of you. And then they'd close the window again. And then now you're answering questions about that. Right. They'd ask you about maybe the meat. So they would ask you about the color, the consistency, the texture, the saltiness, the flavor, the spiciness, all that kind of stuff, right? And it's kind of neat because, you know, I always looked at it as a free lunch.
Yeah, sure. Right?
I'd end up getting usually 3 or 4 items. And then in the end, they'd pay you. So, like, when you're walking out and you check out, they give you an envelope and there's $40 in it. So I'd go down there and I'd get paid $40 to eat lunch for free, right? Yeah. And just answer a few questions. And I did that for maybe a year or two,
During the time that I was writing for that column, all my fast food was tax deductible. So, I joke that the job gave me a great exposure and a fatty liver.
What? So what's some of the weirdest stuff you had when you were doing?
Well, aside from the Domino Worry cookie pizza is the one that always stands out. I remember when I wrote it, the first sentence was... It used to be when someone wanted to have Oreos on their pizza, they were either pregnant or high. And the LA Times did not allow the word high. They thought I was promoting drug use. So they said pregnant or confused. So it didn't quite make sense.
So they were really editing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were writing.
Well, I mean, to their credit, they were letting a guy named Dog review food. You know, and I remember one time I wrote something for a... about a Carl's Jr. thing, and I had said we had to talk about the commercials. I had to review it as like the food itself, the calorie content, the hype, the commercials, and whether you could eat it in the car, you know, whether the portability of it. And I wrote something about a Carl's Jr. thing, and...
So real quick, was all this criteria your own criteria?
No, they'd actually started the column before I had joined. You know, they needed someone to replace the person who was leading. Okay. And then I did it for like 3 years. But
so back to the Carl's Jr.
Carl's Jr. thing. I wrote something positive about, you know, they had like a really sexist commercial to go with it. The girl, it was about the buns. It looked like Hot for Teacher. But I said... it was effective for advertising this product. And I remember someone wrote in and said, I don't know what a Dog Davis is, but it certainly isn't human. And then there was another one that said, Carl Karcher would be rolling in his grave if he knew about this ad. Carl was still alive at the time. But they just thought, oh, he would be against it.
So these are people that actually wrote into
Well, they wrote into the LA Times.
To the LA Times.
You know, I would get, you know, a lot of letters in support, but there'd be a controversy in the fast food.
Did you get backlash from any of the restaurants?
No, not really from the restaurants. No, they were cool.
It was just people that were...
Right. I remember one time I mentioned the fact that there are certain places, bakeries, coffee houses, that are set up in such a way that when they ask you that question, do you want it for here or to go? It not only decides what packaging you're going to get, but whether or not they will tax you or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like they used to actually, there used to be signs at Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf that would explain this, because if you say you're having it there, it's a restaurant item and they tax it. If you say you're having it to go, it's a grocery item and they don't tax it.
Oh.
So I said, you'll always say to go, even if you're just going to go to that chair over there and sit down and eat it, because it will save you on the taxes. But some guy who helped write that legislation was infuriated. He's like, you're making it sound like all the places, all the restaurants do this. And clearly the sentence had the word some written twice in the sentence.
Right,
like
right,
some
right.
places do this and some places do that. So, you know, I was in the clear. I thought, perfectly fine. My editor agreed with me. He gave it to one of the lawyers at the LA Times. And the lawyer was like, I don't know. It seems like Doug Davis is saying that every place does this. I'm like,
really?
Where's your reading comprehension? I mean, we argued it down. There was no
and
retraction.
You would think that a lawyer, they pick out those specific words.
You would have thought.
They'll pick out, well, there's a difference between and or.
Right. I thought it was completely clear if you understand how to deconstruct the sentence. So
I remember having a joint account when I was in my first marriage.
Okay.
Where I had both our names on the check,
mm-hmm.
and we had to use or instead of and.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was and, we both had to sign the check.
We had this thing I was in a jury once, two cops firing their guns in the air on their way going to a strip club. And there was like 14 different counts against them, and one of them was about the aiding and abetting of each other. And it was this, I had my 12 angry men moment, because everyone's saying, I think this is aiding and abetting. But I pointed out, on a chalkboard, it's like, okay, for aiding and abetting, it's got to be, this or this or this or this and this or this. And it's like, you could get everything in the first column, but there was no and. So by, deconstructing the sentence, we said, that's not, and we found them guilty of like, I think, 4 out of the 14 charges. They served a little jail time and they couldn't be cops again, which is really probably if they plea bargained, it would have been the same, deal.
But going back to your time as a food critic.
Right.
So the worst thing you told me that you had was the Oreo pizza cookie.
That's the one that still lingers in my mind.
It's supposed to be a dessert item, I assume, right?
Right.
What was what would you say would be the best thing that you had that's no longer out there?
Well, I remember there was a Togo's had a very, like it was just like a summer roast beef sandwich, a cold sandwich. And it's hard to even get excited about a cold sandwich, but there was something about the way that they put the dressing on it, the type of bread they used, and they put it all together. It's like, wow, this is a really amazing cold sandwich.
Yeah.
It was like, for a summer day, I want to go to Togo's and have this roast beef sandwich. So those are the things that were kind of surprising, But I remember we did the Crunchwrap Supreme at Taco Bell when it first came out. And it's always been my thought about Taco Bell is that it's like the same 9 ingredients that they just rotate. It's like,
right.
Because they can't have very much in that kitchen. The kitchens are going to be really small. And they're run by kids. So you can't really make them do a lot.
Now, I have a friend that was a district regional director or something like this, mm-hmm. right? He was one of the big guys over at Chili's. And he was one of the big guys over there for almost 2 decades.
Okay.
And he doesn't do that anymore. He left there years ago. But he told me for a long time that he couldn't shake. I mean, like whenever he would go and eat somewhere,
right.
he was always judging
mm-hmm.
because that was his job, right? And so he would judge everything whenever he'd go somewhere because that was, when he was at Chili's, that's when he would walk in, he would judge the cleanliness, the service,
sure.
the lighting, the ambiance, like whether they're playing, the right kind of music or whatever, right? And I guess what I'm getting at is it kind of wrecked him for a little bit. He says only now, and he's been detached for it now for probably almost 20 years, and he says only now is he able to really just eat freely and not think about all of these other variables, right? Has this experience with the LA Times as a food critic, has it affected you in the same way?
Yeah, I, didn't eat a lot of fast food for a long time. Taco Bell I still go to on occasion. I don't eat a lot of it. But yeah, they're every now and again, something will be introduced and I'll go, God, I wish I were writing for that again, because I would really like to try this weird food.
Well, you can still go try it.
Oh, and I do.
You just can't write about it. Well, yeah, you can write about it on your social media. Sure. It's not like it's...
And speaking of it, and I think you will appreciate this, I was the first person in L.A. to write about Jollibee.
Oh, really?
The Filipino fast food. I beat Jonathan Gold by about 3 weeks, so I feel I accomplished something
now,
there.
Before I ask you about what your thoughts are on Jollibee, I want to say something.
Okay.
So,
I'm going to name drop here. Martin Cape.
Sure.
One time he sends me a text and he says, and this was years ago, he says, hey, I've been wanting to try some good Filipino food for a long time. Can you point me to the right place? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you're up in the Bay Area. I'm not really familiar with the restaurants, you know, mm-hmm. what's up there. But maybe you can look up, you know, I gave him a couple of brands that down here, they have multiple locations, right. You know, on the chance that maybe they have some locations up there. And this was like, that was a while ago, you know, I want to say it was over 10 years ago. So I don't know, like, you know, how much of that information was online because... Right. You know, there's a little bit of a Filipino food movement now, but back then there wasn't.
Sure.
You know, so he comes back to me and he says, well, I tried Jollibee. And he said, I have mixed feelings about it. And I said, well, because you ate a Jollibee. And I said, look, there's a place for Jollibee.
Right. It's like the world's weirdest McDonald's.
It's the McDonald's of Filipino food.
Right.
So I said...
Their fried chicken is called Chicken Joy.
It's called Chicken Joy. It's supposed to make you happy. But the fried chicken's really good.
Yeah, it is.
It's got that nice crispy outer skin.
The burger's kind of cool. I mean, the thing that I reviewed was...
I really like the burger.
They had a thing with like glass noodles and a little baby shrimp and their...
Oh, yeah. That's egg. Pancit. It is pancit. It's called pancit palabok. Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but I wanted to pick the thing that was the least American on the menu. And
that
was
probably it, yeah. So... You know, I told Martin this would be like if someone from outside the country said, I'd really like to try some really great American food, where would you send me? That's like sending them to McDonald's, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, that's not really representative of, you know, great cultural Filipino food. And I don't know if he's ever went anywhere else to get some real authentic home-style Filipino food, but that's my thought about, okay... Yeah. For those that go out there and go have Jollibee, there's a place for it.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's like the McDonald's of Filipino food. And sometimes I do crave that Chicken Joy.
Sure.
But for the most part...
In their ice cream, they have like really cool ice cream that's got little red beans in it.
So you're thinking of Halo Halo, which is...
It was Halo Halo.
Yeah, it's a dessert.
Yeah.
And Halo Halo, which is spelled H-A-L-O, H-A-L-O, which sometimes is mispronounced
Halo,
as Halo Halo.
Yeah.
But it's pronounced Halo Halo. It means mix. In Tagalog, which basically it means like potpourri gumbo. That's basically, you know, mix, right? So it's got the red bean in it. It's got jello in it. It's got the ube in it. It's got jackfruit and, you know, coconut jelly and that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. And then they put a crushed ice and evaporated milk to fill it, and then they put a scoop of ice cream on top.
Right.
So it's a really good dessert.
Very colorful. Very colorful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah. So now that I've said what I said,
Jollibee,
you're the first guy to review Jollibee.
In L.A. So.
Now, what were your thoughts?
When I wrote about it, I compared it to the movie Pulp Fiction, where they, you know, talk about going to Burger King in Paris or something.
Yes.
Where he says it's like the same, but it's just a little. And that's kind of what Jollibee was. It's like McDonald's. They got like a little B character who's painted the same colors as Ronald McDonald. You know, everything's there, but there's just something a little weird and a little off about everything, which I thought was funny. I thought it was endearing and charming. So,
okay, well, that's good. So, but I can see what you're saying because like Filipino spaghetti. Mm-hmm. It's sweeter.
Okay.
And it's got hot dogs in it. Right. Oh, yeah. So they serve that at Jollibee.
Oh, do they? I don't know if I have that.
And then they have burgers, which I think are, I mean, like,
yeah, they're comparable to like the very cheapest McDonald's.
That's what I was gonna say. I grew up in Southern California, so I know a good burger.
Right. Yeah.
And Jollibee just misses the mark on that. You know, more than misses the mark. Yeah. I mean, it's not a burger place. So.
No, it's you know. It's the food you need to sober up with, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
They have Spam sliders there.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah.
Get that in some of the Hawaiian restaurant, the Hawaiian barbecue.
Yeah. Well, Spam is a very popular meat dish in the Philippines.
Okay.
And, you know, in all these Pacific islands, right? In Hawaii, I'm still
going to. Are you going to take that?
Yeah, I'll still drink it, yeah. Like in Hawaii, it's very popular.
Okay. Right?
And in the Philippines, it's very popular. So they make it with these dinner rolls that are called pandesal, which is, you know, if you translate
bread
that.
Bread of the sun?
Salted bread. Sal okay, is salt.
Sal, not salt.
S-A-L, yeah. Okay. And it's not, doesn't taste salted, but that's what it's called. And so they take that roll, they slice it open, put some mayo in there, and put a slice of fried Spam in it.
Okay.
So it's good, you know, if you like Spam.
I like Spam.
And, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know. But, you know, all this food talk, it brings me to, you know, this, I was having this, I don't know if you could call it a debate or an argument. I was just ribbing our friends over at Adventures of Tiki, Angelica Navarro.
Oh, yeah. I met her for the first time.
She's such a sweet girl. Yeah. I love Angelica. So shout out to Angelica. And check out her blog, Adventures in Tiki. She writes about Tiki things on her blog and her adventures when she goes traveling to different Tiki bars, not just in Texas, but around the United States.
Right.
And she's based out of Dallas. And I know that you're a Texan.
Right. I lived 20 years in Houston, 5 years in Austin, 3 years in Dallas, and a couple of months in San Antonio.
So, sixth generation?
I go back to the Battle of, it's because we won it. It's called the Battle of San Jacinto. It would have been, you know, San Jacinto had we lost the...
Ah, that's funny.
The battle. But yeah, I go back that far. So
all this food talk, and knowing that you're a Texan...
Uh-huh.
She and I got into this little bit of ribbing, you know.
Sure.
It was a friendly, you know, jab at each other about Tex-Mex.
Sure.
And, you know, you're a Texas guy.
Right.
So you probably like the Tex-Mex.
I do love the Tex-Mex.
And I have not met a Texan who doesn't love the Tex-Mex. Yeah. But as a guy who came from California, right. I found the Tex-Mex... way off the mark. Yes. And I said, oh my God, that stuff is terrible. Now she said, well, here's the problem. She said, you're equating it to Mexican food. Well, naturally I would because it's called Tex-Mex.
Right.
And she said, it's its own thing.
Right.
So if you don't equate it to Mexican food and you don't compare it to California Mexican food, you can enjoy it for what it is. And I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Bourdain once trashed it by saying it was like Mexican food for people who don't like Mexican food. I think that's what he said. But at the same time, I think, you know, at the same time, he will, you know, champion Mexican street food. And I would say Tex-Mex was the Mexican street food of, 150 years ago.
Okay.
You know, like chili con carne was developed in San Antonio at the time when Texas was a state or was possibly even its own country, but it was made by the Mexicans that had lived there. I mean, once Texas got its independence, you know, they didn't kick the Mexicans out. So
it was just odd to me. So, you know, I had a friend take me to a Tex-Mex place.
Right.
I said, take me to a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this soup with the same beans, like the refried beans that you would get in a burrito out here.
Okay.
Right? But it had milk and corn in it.
Ooh, I don't know if I've had that.
And it was made as a soup.
Okay.
They gobbled it up. And I thought, ooh, this is strange. Because, again, I was looking at it from the perspective that, is this Mexican food? They don't make this in Mexico, you know?
But, sure.
So that was what was odd to me. And then the rest of it was... And again, maybe because I was equating it to Mexican food, it was uneventful to me. They were really raving about this place, and I was thinking the whole time that I was eating it, well, what's the big deal? I don't see.
Well, I would say the one thing they do in Tex-Mex food that's different from here is that everything's kind of smothered in cheese. There's tons of cheese in everything. And chili con queso, which shows up as an appetizer and as a side dish all over Texas. There's only a few places here in California I've seen chili con queso on the menu.
Yeah, they have it at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Well, that's because they serve it as like a nacho cheese sauce, right. But it really should be better than that. You know, it's a step above nacho cheese sauce.
Well, it was good.
Well, it's good.
I liked it as a nacho cheese sauce.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And you know, if it's a corporation that's out of Texas, like Chili's or used to be TGI Fridays was originally started its corporate expansion outside of Dallas. They used to have some decent Tex-Mex things on their menu, so you could get it outside of the state.
Is there anywhere out here where I can get Tex-Mex? Because now I want to give it another try.
Right. I mean, the only one of the few places I know that has chili con queso on the menu is a place called Merrick's in West Hollywood. They have a good Taco Tuesday, so I go there on occasion because like $10 and all the tacos you can
eat. But it's
not
Tex-Mex.
No, the tacos aren't. The tacos really aren't. But they have items in there that are Tex-Mex.
So I'm going to have to Google this because, you know, it wasn't that long ago where you couldn't get an authentic Philly cheesesteak. And I know there would be an argument that it's not really authentic if you're not in Philly.
Well,
but there are some spots out here
where they import the bread.
They import the bread. They import everything.
Yeah.
They import the bread. They import the cheese. They import the meat.
Booze does that.
Booze does it. Philly's Best does it. They even have all the dessert, like the tasty cakes.
Right.
And all the beer. Mm-hmm. And what else? But everything that comes from Philly, they bring it out here.
Right.
And then they just make it here.
What's that bay seasoning that they
the
like?
Bay seasoning is another one. Yeah.
They add that.
And they make hoagies, right? Philadelphia style hoagies. So now you can get an authentic, and I put that in air quotes, right? You can get an authentic Philly cheesesteak in California.
Yeah.
So maybe there's an authentic Tex-Mex place.
Yeah, right off the top of my head, though, I can't really.
So she told me that her favorite Tex-Mex place is called Chewy's. And I said, we have Chewy's.
No, different.
We have Chewy's,
Completely.
So then when she sent me the link to her Chewy's, it's spelled C-H-U-Y.
Right.
Here it's C-H-E-W-Y. Chewy's.
Okay. Well, I think there actually was a C-H-U-Y that had no relation.
No relation.
To the thing. But yeah, Chewy's is actually one of my favorite. And I remember in the mid-80s, I was in Texas working on movies. And most of the film crews would come from California. I was, a local person. And so I would be the one that bring them in. And at that time, they would come in and they would say, could you please tell us where to go to get this stuff called fajitas? Because we had fajitas 10 years before you guys.
Yeah, no, you're right. I remember that. I remember when fajitas was new.
Yeah, early 80s, it became very popular in Texas. Late 80s, probably California.
Yeah, you know what I find weird is, like, for example, poke for the past couple of years has had a huge, got a lot of attention.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's everywhere now.
Yes.
And just a few years ago, you couldn't get it anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's been in Hawaii forever.
Right.
Right? And then now, a place opens up here, a place opens up there.
Right.
And then, boom, every town's got a poke place.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing, I guess, with fajitas. Right. I'm curious about what the next new thing is going to be. Because, things are always changing. You know, one of the things I said to my kids is that, and I sound like my parents when I say, you know how lucky you are. Right? My parents used to say that to me all the time, especially my dad. Do you know how lucky you are?
Right.
He would say that he used to walk uphill to school 2 miles, both ways.
Right?
Like, how do you walk up both ways? But, I find myself saying that to my kids when I would say to them, when I was a kid, we had 13 channels and half of them didn't work.
Right.
Right? We didn't have like this plethora of you know, hundreds of cable channels, and then all this other stuff that you could buy, right? Like Netflix and Hulu, and then you have YouTube and all this other free stuff, like, you know.
Right. And all of your friends' phone numbers you had memorized.
You had to memorize. So I'd memorize by pattern.
Yes.
Right? And so I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, where I grew up, the fancy place for dinner where we went to all the birthdays and the graduations and the anniversaries was Sizzler.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I still kind of look at it in that way because it was the fancy place for me growing up.
Right.
But now, like, my kids have all these, so many choices, right?
Right.
You can find a good restaurant or a great restaurant in any kind of genre,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Thai, Japanese, right. Italian,
just Mexican. Yelp it.
Exactly. And you could find a great hole in the wall, and you could find a great, you know, mom and pop place.
Sure.
Right? Where we didn't have that. You know, all our great places were really within the town that we lived in, right?
Mm-hmm.
With just the places that we knew. And if you knew of a place that was, you know, outside your city, it was because someone told you that was from that area,
mm-hmm.
right? And they said, oh, you got to try this, blah, blah, blah. And then I would drive out to, like, North Hollywood or something, right? And, or downtown or whatever,
right?
Right? But, so, yeah, that's my rant. So, anyway,
kids.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, Ground Zero for tropical drinks.
You were working in film when you were in Texas.
Right.
Yeah. What were you doing there?
Well, I graduated with a degree in film from UT. So I, you know, eventually I came out here. So
Are you still doing that? Or
what? Well, I work at a film studio, but I have no creative input. I'm a union laborer.
Okay.
So yeah, there's nothing creative in that. But I mean, I worked on movies. I did the first RoboCop 1 and 2 as a production assistant. The first film I worked on was True Stories by David Byrne of the Talking Heads. It was John Goodman and a bunch of people. And that's actually the first time I went to a tiki bar because that was shot in Dallas, and most of the cast and crew were staying at the Hilton, and the Trader Vic's was in the lobby of the Hilton. So when I would pick some actor up from the, you know, and have to take him to the airport or to a doctor's appointment or something, I would usually walk into Trader Vic's and find them, you know, having a cocktail. I never drank with them because I'm making $200 a week and I don't want to, you know,
right.
sit there with pop staples. What am I going to talk to them about? You know, so.
Right.
But yeah, that was like my first tiki experience was going into the Trader Vic's in Dallas. But yeah, I worked on a, you know, half dozen films. And I also worked for Film Dallas Pictures, which was a production company that worked on Kiss of the Spider Woman and a few other films. And then I moved out here in 90. And then I guess my first California tiki experience was going to Kelbo's for a birthday party. And then I went to Tiki Tea probably around 92. But during that time, from like 90 through like 96, I didn't drink.
Oh.
My brother and my father had both had pancreatitis,
mm-hmm.
which is a horrible thing. And alcohol can exacerbate that. And so I couldn't afford health insurance when I moved out here. The health insurance was way too high. I had, you know, didn't have a lot of money. So during those, you know, 6 or 7 years, whatever, I didn't drink at all. And it was fine. But I mean, I do definitely remember going to Tiki T without.
Were you not drinking in support of your brother and your father? Or were you, was it?
I was worried that if I were to come down with pancreatitis, I couldn't afford the hospitalization or whatever. I mean, once I got a good job with, had really good health insurance, I started drinking like a fish.
So the thing is that, if you're going to Tiki T, mm-hmm. especially back then, Ray was still around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but you know, like, you didn't know back then, too. Right. It wasn't really one of these things that yet that was documented about, you know, his legacy and his contribution to the right. whole cocktail scene and the whole tiki scene. But please tell me that you were able to get something from Ray eventually.
I don't, I was there to, you know, I was there with a girl, you know, okay. and she wanted a cocktail. So that was, I was more about getting her drunk.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and then being the designated driver and bringing her back home. Right. So, but yeah, I mean, he definitely would have been there, and I probably have a vague memory of him, but nothing that sticks out.
You know, I started going to the Tiki T somewhere around 1995, 1996.
Okay.
And it was a stop for us when I was in my 20s back then.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go clubbing out in Hollywood. And we would stop there first because the drinks were strong.
Right.
And we would drink there before we went to the clubs out in Hollywood. Sure. And when we'd get to the clubs, we'd have one drink, you know. But we wanted to get to the clubs to have, you know, already be in that mode, zone, yeah. right, where we were already a little bit buzzed and, you know. Anyway, the point I'm getting at is I have a vague memory too,
mm-hmm.
but I don't remember being served by an old guy.
Right.
And the only older guy that I got served by once with that had gray hair was not there. It was at a bar in Old Town Pasadena somewhere in the mid-90s, and he was an asshole to me. And it wasn't Hollywood, and it couldn't have been
right.
Ray.
Right.
But I know that I was served by, I don't want to even want to say a younger guy, a regular guy,
right.
which is probably Mike Sr.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then, it was easy to just walk in and get a drink. You know, it wasn't crowded.
Yeah.
You know, we would go early and we would go and have a drink or two there, you know, before we hit the clubs in Hollywood. So I wish I knew then what I know
now. No, sure, sure.
Right. But anyway, that's my add to that story. You know, like if you have that vague memory,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and that's all it is. It's just some vague memory of going there. And, you know, I remember, you know, probably not remember, you know, knowing what's on the menu, you get that sort of intimidating menu.
Right.
But, you know, I was just there to buy cocktails for my lady friend. And, I don't really remember much beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting stuff. I mean, like, you know, if you were going to tiki bars in the 90s, I'm sure that you saw a couple that are not around anymore. You said Kelbo's.
Yeah, Kelbo's. Kelbo's, I went for a birthday party. I remember that specifically.
Do you remember what it looked like in there?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do. And in fact, I mean, you know, the exterior hasn't changed that much now that it's the Fantasy Island strip club.
Right, right. Well, that's not there anymore.
No, have they taken it down yet?
Fantasy Island closed down.
I heard it had closed down, but I was just drove past it recently, and the facade's still up there at least.
Oh, okay. So. Well, there is a sign that had still the tiki mask.
Right. But it's got like the crow's nest, and it's got like the
right and
stuff.
I had heard about who bought the sign, okay. but I don't know if he has it.
Okay. Well, I did when Fantasy Island was still around, like 3 or 4 years ago. I went inside just to see if I could find any remnant.
So they really gutted the interior.
Yeah. And of course, I couldn't look around too much because women in bikinis were wanting me to dance. You know, or something. Yeah, like,
they want your money.
I'm really just trying to see if there's
They're good at extracting your money.
That's their
focus. I wish I knew about it back then,
yeah.
or else I would have gone and seen it.
No, it was very good. It reminded me a lot of Bahuka.
Yes. I understand that the rib recipe was the same, too.
Oh, okay. Oh.
From what I understand, the ribs they served at Bahuka came from the recipe at
Kelbo's.
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they would put that same thing about ribs, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And there was a time, I guess the 90s was big about that, where they would market their ribs, not just them, but a lot of places.
Well, I mean, Bahuka had their own salad dressing in grocery stores for a while.
No, the salad dressing at Bahuka was good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, it was fine. And, yeah. But the fact that, you know, Ralph's was carrying it, you know, that was...
I never saw it in grocery stores, but I would have bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sold it at the restaurant.
Yeah, they sold it at the restaurant, but they also sold it in stores, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they were supposed to be doing stuff like that with the Kahiki. When they closed down, their food started...
Where's the Kahiki?
It's in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Their food started going into some of the local grocery stores, and it was supposed to start going nationwide.
Hmm.
But we didn't see any of that,
right.
You know. And I don't think that it's really necessarily going to be the same if it got to the grocery store.
Oh, sure,
right?
Sure.
I mean, like...
Yeah, like Wolfgang Puck food at the grocery store is nothing like anything you'd have at Wolfgang Puck's restaurant.
Exactly. Well, like the big example for me is White Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know that a lot of people think White Castle is garbage, but... And you, as a fast food critic, I don't know what your thoughts are on White Castle.
It's perfect for what it is.
Oh, that's a great answer.
Yes.
Now, my dad, before he passed away, had retired and moved to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would go visit him, I would go to White Castle because we didn't have them out here.
Okay, yeah.
And I took my son with me and he was like, these melt in your mouth. He's like, these are awesome. Mm-hmm. Like the little slider with the steamed bun. Mm-hmm. Nobody's doing that here. Now, from what I understand, they try to make a go of it out here, but they didn't use their name. They used a different name so that people wouldn't. So that they would get an objective feedback, right, on their stuff. But apparently it didn't do well, which is a bummer.
Yeah. Well, did you ever notice that their meat has five holes in it?
Yes.
It looks almost like the number five on a domino.
Right, but they do that because
they don't have to flip it that way. I mean, it cooks from the underneath. It'll cook everything, and that way you save the flipping.
Okay. Okay. Well, you can buy the White Castle at Albertsons.
Sure, the microwavable. Sure, sure.
And I buy them, like because the kids like them, right?
And you can also get them at some movie theaters. There are a couple of movie theaters
I mean, it'll do.
Yeah.
Right. But it's certainly not when you get it there.
It's a different experience.
Because I think the closest one here is what in Vegas, maybe.
Right.
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 Now, what do you think about Shake Shack?
I've been once, maybe. I know I've been once. Fine. But it didn't bowl me over the way that, you know, all the reviews and the lines out the door sort of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
It just didn't bowl me over. But I'll try it again. You know, I'm not anti-Shake Shack.
I actually thought it was pretty damn good.
Did you?
I was actually blown away.
Oh, was it?
Oh, it was awesome. To me, it was awesome.
Well, okay. I'll try it again.
My thought about it is, now the first time I tried it was in Vegas.
Okay.
And then they opened some out here.
Right.
Hollywood.
That's true. Actually, I've been once in Vegas and once here in LA. So.
Yeah, they have one in Glendale, mm-hmm. and they have one in Hollywood, mm-hmm. and I haven't eaten at any other ones out here.
There's a West Hollywood as well.
I haven't been to the one in West Hollywood. I went to the one that was close to Hollywood and Vine.
Okay.
So anyway, it was good. I think the secret in that burger is their bun.
Okay.
Now, there are a lot of people that say better than In-N-Out. Okay. And there are a lot of other brands that say better than In-N-Out.
Sure.
If you walk into Five Guys, they have all these marketing posters on the wall that have quotes from the San Francisco Chronicle and whatever, right? Different publications that say better than In-N-Out. Which to me... If you've got to compare yourself to In-N-Out, that tells you what kind of burger In-N-Out is spitting out. Because if you got to say, oh, yeah, we're better than In-N-Out, well, they didn't pick any other burger. Right? So
they're not saying it's better than Jollibee.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's more than one brand saying they're better than In-N-Out. Right. So, you know, apples to oranges to me, it's a different burger.
Exactly.
Right? So, but yeah, that's my disclaimer to that because, you know, I was... Raised in Southern California, In-N-Out Burger is my burger, but Shake Shack's got a good burger.
I think one of the things that helped me writing the fast food columns was that I didn't have a favorite burger. You know, I could review a McDonald's
thing. You have to be impartial that way.
Yeah, right? I mean, that was it. It was like if Burger King had something come out, I just compared it to what Burger King's normal stuff is or McDonald's. So I would never, because people would always say, what's your favorite burger? And it's like, I really don't have one. It probably worked in my...
But still? You still don't have one?
No. If I'm going to have a burger, it's going to be like in a restaurant, like a sit-down restaurant. Because right. They're going to be better. If it's going to be...
Okay, you don't have a favorite, but do you have a go-to?
Just because...
That you just think, like, this is going to be consistent.
Because of location and because they're open 24 hours, probably Jack in the Box. But, you know, that's...
Well, okay, outside of fast food, yeah. What about a sit-down place?
Well, I mean, the Fuddruckers chain, which is also a Texas chain.
Yeah.
They make their own bun. They make their own bun.
Yeah.
They have a really fresh produce bar. But the thing that makes Fuddruckers really cool, it's the only place I know that gives... customers complete access to a nacho cheese pump.
Yes.
You can just pump as much cheese. You can pump it on the fries. You can pump it on your... If I ever, you know, get really down and out and I want to kill myself, I'm just going to spread out on the condiment thing and just pump cheese into my mouth until I blow up.
That's funny because my kids look at that thing like it's a chocolate fountain.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yes.
So...
You come back and it's just all over everything. It's all over the...
Right. Now, here's what I love about the Fuddruckers burger. Because they do have a great burger to me.
Yeah, I think...
Now, the bun is awesome. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they bake it. And then I see them just slice it. I mean, it's a full bun before they slice it, right?
Right.
It's not something that came out of a bag that was pre-sliced.
Right, no, they're baking it there.
It's awesome and soft.
Mm-hmm.
And... the burger's flavorful,
mm-hmm.
and so the way that I make my burger there, right, is I like using the chopped onions,
mm-hmm.
and the shredded lettuce, mm-hmm. and the honey mustard.
Okay.
That honey mustard is so awesome there. They have those wedge cut fries with the, I don't know if it's Lowry's seasoned salt on it.
Yeah.
But it's their seasoning.
Right,
they got
there's
that
like cayenne pepper and a few other things.
Right,
paprika.
And that with the... honey mustard. I put the honey mustard as the dip for the wedge cut fries, and I put two pumps in my burger. Oh my God, man, that honey mustard is so good.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a sweet tooth.
Oh, okay.
So
it makes my burgers, explain why you drink all the tea.
Right.
Drinks,
it makes it sweeter to me. Okay. Right. And it melts in my mouth. It's so freaking good, man. That's a good burger. But what's weird is we had a bunch of Fuddruckers out here, and we're only down to a couple.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only think. I think of the one in Burbank. I don't know where any.
Oh, I don't know about that one, but there's one in Garden Grove, I think,
okay.
or Buna Park, and then there's one down in Lake Forest.
Okay.
I know that one. Now, do you remember Flaky Jake's?
I saw the name. I don't think I ever ate.
Flaky Jake's was like a Fuddruckers.
Okay.
And they were a chain too.
Mm-hmm.
And they closed down.
Well, in the 80s, back in Texas, Fuddruckers was like a pickup joint. I mean, that was the place, you know, after work, the you know, people who worked in the offices.
They had
like a happy hour, you know, for beer. And you just like, you get six beers for the price of three or something. But it was that was considered to be a place to go where you eat a burger, you have a few beers, you play video games or darts or whatever, and you hit on girls. Yeah, it was, and they had like a sign, you know, no photographs taken inside the Fuddruckers. I mean, it was considered sort of like
exclusive. Do they have a DJ playing music and all that?
I don't think they went that far.
Because they had that at Black Angus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Black Angus used to be the steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 90s, in the early 90s, I don't know if it was because they were starting to lose some business and they were trying to reinvent themselves. I don't know, but they're all gone now. But in the early 90s, they called it Square Cow Fun Bar because it was their logo was a square cow.
Okay.
So they called it the Square Cow Fun Bar. And they started bringing in like
DJs.
And they would turn the lights out at the bar and they'd have like the dancing lights, you know, and they'd have the DJs mixing music and they'd have happy hour. And in the 90s, this was a popular thing in the 90s, they would do free food buffet in the bar. So the idea was that it would bring people into the bar, they would buy drinks, and then they would hang out and spend money on drinks, right? Start dancing, meet girls. They were doing that at Bobby McGee's.
Wasn't there a chain called the Red Onion?
They were doing it at the Red Onion.
Because I remember the Red Onion advertising. I don't think I ever went into a Red Onion. Now, but that seemed to be something.
The whole free buffet thing, I think, and it was a trend in the 90s, but I don't think it worked out because college kids were going in there and eating for free and just ordering water, right? So, and I said that to my son because I saw him yesterday. I went to UCLA, and I picked him up for Free Museum Day. We went to the Getty.
Okay.
And yeah, they do that Free Museum Day every year, not just at the Getty, but there's a whole list, right, of museums that are free for the day. And, you know, I ate at his dorm. They have these dining halls that are just amazing.
Okay.
There are these buffets that are, I mean, it's loaded with food. And I said to him, I said, you'll never know what that starving student moniker was that we all suffered through,
right?
Because I said, you know, if I had access to this buffet three times a day, 7 days a week, I would be so fat, you know, and that he has access to that buffet three times a day, 7 days a week. And I said, I said, you know, when I was in college, we used to go to the bars that had the free buffets and then order a glass of water, you know, and eat for free, you know. And then if I happened to have a little bit extra money in my pocket, I'd buy a $3 cocktail. Right. Because back then, you could get a drink for $3 or $4, right? They had $2 wells, you know. So, and then there was a place that I used to go to called the Hungry Hound. They used to do $2 Tuesdays. They were Taco Tuesdays. So you got two tacos for a dollar. And they called it $2 Tuesdays because pitchers were $2.
Okay.
So everybody was drinking out of pitchers because they're $2 a piece. You'd get, so for $3, you got two tacos and a pitcher of beer, basically.
Holy cow.
Right? But this was early 90s. This was like maybe 92, 93, you know. I wasn't very seasoned back then with the whole cocktail thing, you know. I was a young guy in my 20s just trying to get drunk and pick up girls. But so, yeah, times certainly have changed.
Yes.
Right. So, but yeah, Red Onion, that was a popular place. They got shut down. They lost their license because they had a problem with underage drinking. So, from what I understand.
Right.
Yeah, that was the rumor.
See, now I was a waiter back in Texas for a while. And, you know, it was the TGI Fridays. I did the whole, I mean, that's almost like, you know, the Marines of being a waiter because they had very strict thing. They didn't want you to serve off of a tray. They wanted you to line the food up your arm. You had to hold at least three glasses in a hand.
Right.
And there was just like, you know, certain thing, you know, they're very, very strict in the, you know, you had the bar in the center and that was like, you know, just the, in the 80s, it was like the Long Island iced tea. That was the big drink. That was that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I drank a bunch of those.
and the weird thing was in Texas was because we had like dry counties and dry areas where because of local restrictions, you couldn't drink alcohol. But they would put a TGI Fridays in there and say, okay, we have a club membership. You can drink if you join the club. It's like, okay, so how much does it cost to join the club? It's like the price of one drink. So basically, you would...
So that wasn't bad.
Yeah, you filled out a card, you bought a drink, and you were in the club.
In the club.
So you could...
And then you could drink some more.
Yes.
So there you go.
But I know you had mentioned on an earlier podcast about you called it the Matador.
The Matador.
That was where they take the bar mat, they pour it into a...
Yeah.
Bar. We just called it the mat, but we had that.
Yeah.
And I think the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission said no. the mat was not.
It's not sanitary.
No, because you're it's just all the alcohol and whatever is poured into the bar mat.
I know that some places call it a suicide. Also, I heard of that term too. So. Yeah, it's amazing how much these bar mats can hold. We could fill up almost a full pint glass with all the bar mats. But the bar would, you know, it's not the size of my home bar. It was a bar, right? It was like, you know, this came from the episode you're probably listening to, is I dated a girl that worked at Q's Billiards. And okay. So that bar is long right. bar, right? Right? And it's actually like a U-shape. And in one of their locations, it was a big square.
Right. And then TGI Fridays were squares. It was like, you know, Cheers.
It yeah.
was that shape.
It was giant. So, you know, if you took a pint glass and you just went from mat to mat, you could just about fill it up, right? I never tried one.
Well, you know, I mean, people claim that's what the, if you go to the Double Down in Vegas, that's what the ass juice is. I don't think it is.
Oh, no, I thought that that was actually a drink.
Yeah, the ass juice, they make it, I think, out of what the bottom parts of bottles, you know, when it gets down to like less than an inch.
Okay.
And they put it all together and then they add like Sprite and like Slow Gin or something. You know, there's like something that they kind of cover, but they do say it's different each time.
Do they serve it in a special mug?
Well, you can buy a shot glass that looks like a toilet that has a,
okay, that's what I meant,
like a dirty toilet. Yeah,
because Bobby McGee's, they were a restaurant that looked like any kind of, it kind of looked like a Mimi's Cafe,
right?
But all the wait staff, they wore costumes,
right? I remember Bobby McGee's
when they would wrap your food. Like if you say, can I get a box for this because I'm taking it to go,
right.
They'd put it in a giant piece of foil and they'd make a swan out of it.
Sure.
Something like that.
Right.
They had mugs. And they had a mug in the shape of a toilet.
Okay.
They also had a mug in the shape of a boot. And I don't remember if they had any other mugs. I want to say that they did.
Right.
But I don't know if those were for specific drinks. But the ass juice sounds like it should be served in a toilet.
They have a little toilet shot that actually has like a turd in it. You know, and Double Down is owned by P. Moss, who also,
yeah, also owns Frankie's. Yeah. Yeah.
But
he owned Double Down before he opened Frankie's.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, he also fancies himself a writer. He's written a couple of novels.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I've read one of them.
Are they good?
He's a bar owner that writes novels.
Okay.
But I remember he
No diss to P. Moss.
No.
Because P. Moss is our friend.
I love the man. You know,
yeah, he's a cool guy.
And I've talked to him a couple of times.
My guess is that he's making more money from his slot machines than he's making from his cocktails.
Possibly.
Possibly. Because, you know,
I mean, both of the places are 24 hours and they have the video games.
Well, the thing is, if you go into Frankie's and you sit down for a drink, you're probably going to spend more money on the slot machine you're sitting at than you are on the drinks that you order that night. That would be my guess.
Right.
Right. I mean, if you have three drinks, you're at $40. But $40 on a slot machine is 5 minutes worth of pushing a
that's
button.
That's true.
Right? If, yeah. 5 minutes if you're lucky,
right,
you know?
Right. I never play the video poker. I'm just a regular poker guy.
Yeah, you used to actually play poker, for a living?
I took 9 months off of work a couple of years ago. I took 9 months off, played nothing but poker for 9 months. And the fact that I'm back at my regular job kind of tells you how the poker career went.
Because I was going to ask you if you could actually make a living doing that. Because we have a friend. Do you know John Lukasik?
Yes. He and I are very close and we've talked poker all the time.
Because he was also a professional gambler, right?
Right. Well, yeah. He did both the California blackjack, where he worked as the banker, the way California blackjack.
Oh, yeah,
blackjack.
Yeah. I know how California, yeah.
He was a banker for others, but he played a very unique type of poker, a very kind of rare type of poker. But I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's like Omaha, except you get an extra card. I forget.
And he was doing it all online, I think.
There were tournaments that he. I mean, we would go to tournaments together, and he would play his version of poker, and I would go play Texas Hold'em, which is like the more common version.
Okay.
But no, I know him very well, and we
he's a pit boss now.
Yeah,
that's what it took him to. Is
right,
that
right? Well, he was a pit boss for a while, and then he quit that. He's getting his PhD in gaming theory or something like that. And so he's up there at UCLA getting his PhD.
He's at UCLA now?
UNLV.
UNLV. I was going to say, UNLV. I thought he was in Vegas.
Yeah, he's in Vegas. But no, he came up with a game a couple of years ago that got a lot of the casinos. He got to interview at a lot of casinos because he basically it was a You know, people play fantasy football, and he found a way of taking the fantasy football idea and making it something that you would want to go to a casino and play.
Oh, really?
And so, you know, the casinos, the you know, little dollar signs started showing up in their eyeballs, and you know, he was taking. You know, you talked to a lot of different people, it never came through, but he's always doing something. He's got his hands in something or another.
Here's the thing about John. I love John.
Uh-huh.
John's a good friend.
Yeah.
And we've talked a little bit, just a hair, about what he does.
Right.
It's all booze that we talk about. Because he was a regular at Tiki T.
Right, right.
For a while. And I believe he's a Drooling Bastard too, right?
I don't think he actually did the I can remember a New Year's Eve a few years back where I ended up literally with a lampshade on my head, and he knocked a whole tray of glasses out of Marie King's hand by accident.
Yeah,
but then he got like angry at somebody, and he ended up driving me home. And then it was really he regretted it. I regretted it. We both next time went, oh no, we should.
It was
not
New
have done
Year's
that.
Eve.
It was just
bad. Like,
I have many good experiences drinking with John. One of them I can remember. We went to Frankie's Tiki Room once, and the guy at the door says, it's kind of crowded in there. I don't know if you want to go in there. We have both a librarians convention and our roller derby girls.
Librarians and roller derby girls.
We're going to risk it. We're going to try to get in there.
That's one of those where I'm like, well, I can't miss this.
Yes, yes.
I have to go in and see this.
But it was literally two girls for every guy. I mean, it was just packed with
that's
women.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it was fun. I'd
love to see a librarian let loose. Yeah. The roller derby girls.
On the outskirts of Vegas, they used to have a strip club called the Library Club, and it said gorgeous librarians was on the sign. Oh, I never
that's
went
hilarious.
In it, but
there was a strip club actually in Lake Forest.
Okay.
A one traffic light away from the Fuddruckers that was called the Library.
Yeah.
And I never walked in there. I was too scared to walk in there and see somebody that I knew and then have to do the walk of shame.
Their hair was like tied up, and then they pulled the little string out of their hair, and the hair flows out. My goodness.
Oh my God. I want to see that. Yeah, it's a Hooters now. So, and what's funny is that I have a coworker that's just a couple years older than me, and you know, I have a son in college now.
Sure.
His son already graduated college, and it was a few years ago when his son was still in college, and we said, hey, let's go have lunch at Hooters, and we go in there, and she was, our waitress was like, oh, hi, Mr. blah, blah, blah. Like, she knew him her buddy's father. So I was like, okay, this is embarrassing. But so anyway, the librarians though, man, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The librarians letting loose in a tiki bar. The roller derby goes, I would expect.
I think they were like doing like a bar hopping thing that they're there at Frankie's for like an hour, and then they would go and they got the bus and they would go to the next place because it cleared out at some point.
Oh. That's but awesome.
It was fun. It was a fun.
That's awesome.
That was a fun night.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're about ready to wrap here.
Okay. That was good.
I think this was a fun episode, and I think that we could go on for probably a couple more hours.
Oh, sure.
But for in the sake of like turning this into like an all-nighter for our listeners,
sure.
Maybe we could do a sequel sometime.
Love it. This is an honor to be here, and I love this room. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much. And we always hang out at the Tiki T. I think you're always there on Wednesdays, but do you go there any other nights?
I go there Wednesdays, maybe once or twice a month, and I might show up on a Saturday or something if it's, but usually Wednesday is when I go.
Okay, cool. So before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to promote or throw out there for our listeners?
No, I've been thinking that I might start a YouTube channel where I just talk randomly for like 2 minutes on whatever's in my head because don't have kids, you know, so I can't, you know, force, you know,
do a podcast.
Opinions. Sure, I guess. Yeah, because who doesn't want to see like, you know, some old white guy talking about his you know, cast iron skillet or something.
Well, we got to bring color into this, man. Yeah. Come on.
I remember back when I was a kid, you know, just ramble on for a couple of minutes. Maybe I'll start doing that. Maybe this is prodded me in that direction. But procrastination is such
a thing. We'll look out for your YouTube channel. Do you have a blog or anything?
No.
So that surprises me as somebody that was a food critic that used to write for LA Times, right, that you don't have a blog.
Well, that's because the LA Times paid me money.
Yeah.
And the food reviews, it's like when I first started writing the food reviews, they paid me $250 per article. Then it went to $200. And then it dropped to $75. And then it was like, okay, I'm not interested anymore.
Right, right.
So that's just the way it is with journalism in general, I guess. Right.
Well, let's do this. Let's tell everybody that if they want to come out and meet you and hear more stories from you, that they can see you at the Tiki Tea on Wednesdays.
I
know that you're usually there somewhere around 5-ish.
I either do like come at the very beginning around 4 or 5, and then, or I come at the toast at 9 o'clock.
Okay, cool.
So it's one or the other.
Okay. So if you guys want to meet Dog and hear more stories, he's got lots of stories. We're going to do a sequel.
Thank you very much.
I would love to do a sequel. Maybe the next time we do a sequel, we'll do it in a bar.
That's fun.
So let's do that. And for now, you can find him, Dog Davis, on Facebook, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. And it took me like 3.5 years to get on Facebook because they weren't allowing. They thought I was an actual dog, you know, when they saw the name. They were like, yeah, we don't. And then they were like, yeah, we don't allow nicknames. And I'm like, well, how come the number 1 and 2 people on Facebook are named Eminem and Lady Gaga?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So I said, you know, if my bank can cash checks as Dog Davis, if the LA Times could print my name as Dog Davis on 75 articles, if, you know, I have an aunt in East Texas who once sent me a set of dominoes that were engraved with Dog Davis, which I think is probably considered like legal ID in East Texas. You know, finally Facebook caved in and allowed me to do it. So I've been on Facebook.
So you got past the Facebook police.
Right.
You know. There you go. Well, so if you guys have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout out for the show, for me, or for Dog, check us out on Facebook at our group page Inside the Desert Oasis Room. We're also on Instagram at Polynesian Pop. And again, we're at Tiki Tea every Wednesday, so come in and hang out with us, and we'd love to share a drink with you. So thanks for coming by here, Dog. Let's do one more toast here.
Okie dokie.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
And aloha.
Aloha.